This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Joy Powers. Protesters around the country have been taking to the streets since May to speak out against police brutality. Here in Milwaukee, activists are calling for police reforms and accountability. Milwaukee County Sheriff Ernell Lucas has publicly said he supports discussions about reforming police departments. But he's quick to emphasize that, in his opinion, police officers are tasked with solving too many of the problems in our community. And he takes issue with people faulting police for many of these failures. He joins me by Zoom to talk more about police accountability and potential reforms. Sheriff Lucas, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I'm curious, you know, there have been all of these ongoing protests here in Milwaukee County in general, but specifically in the city of Milwaukee. How have you responded? What has your reaction been to these protests and the criticism of local law enforcement?
Well, any conversation that I have regarding protests begins with what we witnessed back on May 25th, and that is one of the more reprehensible acts that shows the depth of man's inhumanity to man in the actions of four former Minneapolis police officers who took the life of one Mr. George Floyd in a way that many of us found the most deplorable, reprehensible act that one could ever imagine. And since that time, we've seen the protests break out in cities all across America, including in Minneapolis, Seattle, Atlanta, Richmond, and Milwaukee, just to name a few. I get it. I understand that people are frustrated and they're enraged by people losing their lives at the hands of those sworn to protect and serve the people. And so I get the frustration and I get the outrage. And there's been a number of calls at the federal, state, and local levels for change to happen, to occur in law enforcement. And I get that and understand that as well. But if we're going to have any dialogue and discussion as to what the future looks like, it must be a discussion on all things. Must be a discussion on the education system, the healthcare system, the employment system, certainly mental health, homelessness, and other systems that when they collapse on the law enforcement profession. And those are issues that we're not prepared to deal with because we're, despite our best efforts, we're not, you know, trained to deal with persons in mental health crisis. We're not trained to deal with persons that are have addictive behaviors, nor are we trained to deal with those juveniles with emotional issues. Yet, all of those issues collapse and fall on law enforcement, so we do the very best we possibly can. If we're gonna have this discussion, it's gotta be one where everybody's at the table, including law enforcement, is seated at the table for us to have a wholesome and healthy discussion on what the future looks like moving forward in our country.
You know, you mentioned a lot of things inside of that, especially mental health being a big thing that impacts your work. And of course, inside of these protests, we've heard a lot of people calling to defund the police. And as part of that, many of them are saying we need to shift resources to people who are trained to deal with some of these situations, to people who are better equipped to deal with someone experiencing a mental health crisis. What do you think of these calls to defund the police and shift that money elsewhere?
Well, it must be a more robust dialogue than just simply to defund the police. We've got to look at what do we have our police doing. There's 18,000 police agencies in this country and over 800,000 men and women serving in this noble profession. And people ask us to do things from a range of, again, respond to those persons that are suffering mental health crises, respond to calls of persons who have overdosed or have addictive behaviors. And then on the lower end, they have us responding to calls of loud music or barking dog complaints and other disorderly acts. If we're going to have a discussion in these regarding these 18,000 agencies and on what it is that each of these communities want them to have, then we've got to then have a robust dialogue on if we're going to look at shifting resources from police agencies to other agencies and other programs in our communities, then what are we going to ask the police to take off their plate? That's where the conversation has got to begin. What do we want to take off the police plate? Is it the stuff on the top end, the real critical issues, or is it the more menial tasks that, again, agencies throughout the country and municipalities all across the country are not dealing with? Who then will deal with those issues if the police are not responding to them? Once we figure those things out, I think the discussion and dialogue regarding reprioritizing, shifting funds is appropriate.
Well, in an ideal world, what do you think the role of the police should be in our community?
It's very basic. It's the one that, going back to the early days of the London Metropolitan Police Department, which is recognized by many as the first professional police agency in the world, is that we are there to address those issues of crime and disorder in our communities, where we wouldn't want or have the military to do that. The military has a function, as we know, to protect this nation against foreign and domestic foes. But the police have a role of, again, protecting and serving our communities, and also, too, to respond to those calls for service in our respective communities. So it's very basic. It's not changed from the days of the first founding of law enforcement in the world, but the demands have changed, and the dynamics have changed, whether it be the advent of the 911 system, whether it been the introduction of technology into the profession and in our society, for that matter, as well. And there's so many other factors that have weighed into what it is that we do that, again, we need to have and think about, again, what does the conversation look like when it comes to shifting priorities in our communities, shifting funding, and more importantly, what do we leave for the police to do?
As you say, there is a lot on the plate of the police forces in our community, but there's also been issues with excessive force, with black-white disparities that people want to fix, that people want to change. What kind of reforms do you think we need here in Milwaukee County?
Well, that certainly is a challenge at all police leaders and sheriffs around the country have, is the issue of force. It is a very delicate subject in law enforcement. We're taught and trained to use techniques ranging from, verbal commands to placing of hands on an individual, to any of the other tools that are available to us that are less lethal. And then in those rare and unfortunate circumstances, the use of deadly force. I don't know of any police agency in the country that is teaching its officers to use techniques like what we witnessed on Mr. Floyd in Minneapolis. I don't know of any police agency in the country that teaches its members to use chokeholds like what we witnessed a few years ago with one Mr. Eric Garner. Those are examples of officers who violate policies and procedures and protocols and resort to measures that have long been banned and outlawed in this profession. We have some of the highest standards in law enforcement. I say we're held to a higher standard, and we ought to be proud. So the 800 hours of training that a Milwaukee County Sheriff's deputy or any law enforcement officer in the state of Wisconsin received includes a number of areas that prepare us to do the job as best as we possibly can. Yet you're going to have a small percentage of individuals, whether it's in law enforcement or whether it's in banking or whether it's in healthcare and sports and others, who take shortcuts, who use other measures, whether banned or inappropriate. And what we've got to do is find ways to rid our profession of those individuals, because when they do acts like what we witnessed in Minneapolis, it hurts all of our profession. It hurts everyone.
If you're just tuning in, this is Lake Effect. I'm Joy Powers, and I'm chatting with Milwaukee County Sheriff Ernell Lucas. It seems like this is part of a larger issue, though. You know, you mentioned Minneapolis, of course, but basically a very similar thing happened in New York. We've seen similar things happen to unarmed black men in cities around the country, and it's not an isolated issue. You know, you bring up there are bad actors in a lot of different fields, but in many fields, bad actors don't lead to death. So I think, like, what a lot of protesters, what a lot of activists are looking for is, how do we reform the system so these bad actors either aren't doing these things or they're held accountable?
Well, that's a good place to start, holding us accountable. I think police chiefs and sheriffs are doing just that around the country. They're holding those individuals that are responsible for these acts accountable. We see the four former Minneapolis police officers have been fired and have been charged with crimes. We see the officers down in Atlanta who used excessive force. They've been charged with crimes. We even seen where the officers who were trying to allow those to exercise their First Amendment rights in Buffalo, and they had a very unfortunate encounter with a gentleman, a senior, and those officers have been charged. So the system does hold us accountable. But, you know, we're talking about reforms. What do we want to do? How do we want to change the system? I think, by and large, the police do fairly well at policing ourselves. We are all looking at the training that we provide our men and women. And is it the very best and to the highest standards and consistent with best practices around the country? We have early warning systems to detect those individuals who have a high number of incidents of excessive force. We have disciplinary protocols in place to address those individuals, from everything from counseling to retraining to termination. So we have everything in place. It's a matter of how effective are we at applying any one or all of those is the question. So when we talk about reform, again, it's not a question of whether, well, the police are not doing something. Yes, we have all of those in place. It's just, are we applying them to the level and to the degree that many observers are saying that we could or we should?
Well, and that gets to another question. You know, when it comes to reforming the police, I think ultimately what people are looking at is not perhaps the systems, but the end impact. And if people are still dying at the hands of police when they are unarmed in situations where the force is excessive, how effective are these measures? What are some of the definitive things that let you know whether or not these kinds of measures are effective? What is your criteria for success?
Well, a lot of what we do in this profession is you can't measure it. How do you measure the absence of crime? You know, people are always saying, well, how effective do we know? Do we need that many police in a community? And it's hard to say that would a crime had taken place, whether an officer was there or was not there. So how effective are we? I guess it depends on who you're asking. I like to think that by and large, we address those issues in our profession of misuse of force or excessive force. I like to think that we have a very strict code of conduct and ethics and morals that we adhere to in our profession, and that individuals who do not adhere to those are dealt with in an appropriate fashion. Let us remember too that law enforcement officers are human beings as well, and they have certain rights and privileges afforded to them that any individual that enters into the criminal justice system would have. And thus, it's not the police chief or it's not the sheriff who is not doing his or her job. Oftentimes, those individuals go before a jury or a judge and either have decisions overturned that police chiefs and sheriffs have made, or are awarded their jobs back. And those are just judiciary decisions that are made that even to the irritation of some police chiefs and sheriffs.
Well, part of that is the issue of qualified immunity. Do you agree with removing qualified immunity for police?
Do we allow doctors to practice without some type of malpractice insurance? Do we allow many others in our society to perform in their duties without some degree of immunity? So no, I would not be one supportive of a removal of qualified immunity. It's a discussion that we could have and how it could be changed. But all the men and women that serve in this profession don't come doing it and expecting that that if they make one decision, whether right or wrong, good or bad, that it could lead to them losing their livelihood, losing their family, losing their homes, losing their freedom. So it's a discussion I think we're way, way from having a definitive answer to the question. But again, it's part of a robust dialogue that we can have, but it just doesn't begin all or nothing. Let's eliminate it altogether. No, that's not what we want to do. How do we make it work for everybody involved?
Well, how do you think we make it work for everyone involved?
I'm but one person in this system. I can only speak from my perspective.
Yeah.
And that, well, again, I said it's necessary and that we must have some assurances, just like in every other profession. Look at what broadcasters do. The views and opinions of this host are not that of this radio station. That's a form of immunity that shields that station from that reporter or that writer. So every profession has some degree or some form of immunity or make exceptions. And so it's something that, again, when we are having a robust discussion and dialogues, let's begin to talk about what that looks like.
The stakes, though, at least when it comes to my profession, are very different. There hasn't been someone, you know, suffocated as a result of my words. My words can't put a knee on someone's neck.
I'd like to think that the media in America, which I find to be a very noble estate, but let's face it, has done some attacks on some people of their livelihoods. And yes, there are consequences of some of the reporting that has occurred in the history of our country. So again, when we're pointing fingers, let's make sure we're not mindful of the fact that when you point one finger, four fingers come back at the individual that's pointing. And so therefore, yes, there's enough for all of us that goes around for all of us when it comes to who's accountable for what in this country. No, there's no direct correlation to your point. But yes, I would argue that yes, what the media has done to end some lives, some livelihoods and some careers has been borderline, again, criminal acts. And so, yes, there's a more than enough finger pointing and blame to go around.
I'm not sure that the end of someone's career could quite be compared to the end of someone's life, but we can move forward from this.
Let me move on. Thank you.
Yeah. So what do you think are some of the obstacles to improving police community relations, with which you've admitted are problematic?
Perception is a major one. Perception reported in the media, the 24-hour news cycle, the advent of everybody's a roving reporter with cell phone cameras and the like. There are so many barriers and impediments to having robust discussions and dialogues on how we improve and enhance relations. So there's just not one, there's many.
When I hear that, though, that sounds like more accountability, that people are taking videos, people are seeing what the police are doing more frequently, and hence want more accountability for their actions.
Okay.
Why is that perception wrong? Why do you think that's more of an obstacle instead of something that's helpful to keep people accountable?
Because there is, in this country, a right to privacy. People have a right to privacy, which is protected in the Constitution. So some of the intrusions that we see because of those that are social media's cameras everywhere in the public space, it does infringe and borders on depriving an individual of their right to privacy. So again, there's so many issues out there that we can discuss. I'm all about transparency. I'm all about accountability. And this sheriff has said that, this sheriff has shown that in all of my discussions. I don't know if you've had the opportunity to hear me in speaking to this community, that we're not perfect people. What we are proud professionals, and we do our very best, and we hold ourselves accountable. And those that violate our values, our mores, we do our very best to weed them out. But we would ask that in every walk of life, whether it's in Congress, whether it's in business, whether it's in athletics, and even in media, that everybody turn that camera, turn that spotlight on everybody in each one of those professions as well, and make those difficult decisions to read out that. Look at what's going on at some of the major news outlets and how a number of their anchors, executives, have been caught up in the Me Too movement and scandals, and how difficult, even as recent, it was to rid that individual from coming over our airwaves each day. So again, when we point a finger in one direction, be mindful of the fact that four comes pointing back at those that are making claims.
That was Milwaukee County Sheriff Ernell Lucas. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.